When you were in law school, did you think about what you wanted to do when you were finished?
Not with a great deal of not in great detail. I knew that I wanted to work in somewhere where I could have direct contact with clients because I had been working for Harold Miller for 6 years, and that was a, I was the only one in the office. There was no public coming in. Occasionally, some of his business associates would come in to meet with him, but I was alone. I had spent those years pretty much alone. And I was very eager at that time then to start having some contact where I would have with other human beings. And that was generally, I'd never been even in a courthouse when I started law school. And I gathered some views along the way. I thought that one thing that I didn't want to go to a large firm because I was under the impression that if you go to a large firm, you're going to spend 10 years in the library doing research and writing memos for the real lawyers. And I didn't, you know, I was 47 when I graduated and 48 when I was hired by Davies Biggs, and I didn't have 10 years to spend in the library. So my view was I wanted to be in a small firm and working directly with clients immediately, and that's about as focused as I was. Not very.
You graduated in 1968.
1968.
What made you decide to, or what happened right after you graduated?
Well, I had this comfortable job with Mr. Harold Miller, and he immediately gave me a raise, another one, because he wanted to keep me. I started watching the bar bulletin for jobs. I didn't even consider starting my own office because I didn't feel that you could come out of law school and know how to practice law. Some people have done it, and some people have done it successfully, but I didn't believe that I could. So I wanted to find a job, and not necessarily one that would pay a lot of money because I'd lived very frugally and I had no law school debts. So I'd watched the ads in the bar bulletin, and I talked to several people who were looking for a young lawyer to share office space and overflow work. And in those days, they didn't even want a woman for those things, a woman who could help pay their overhead. One man I interviewed even had the made the asinine remark that, "Well, I would have no objection to a woman, but I'm not sure if my clients would accept a woman." And what I didn't say, but should have said, "Of course, if you go to them and say, 'Would you mind if I had this woman do it?' Of course they're not going to, but it depends on how you present her." So I did not find a position. And I was on the fence about really going out and practicing law or staying with Mr. Miller because he was a very fine person. I admired him deeply. He was very impressed with the fact that I'd gone to law school. He didn't even know I was in law school until I was in my last year, I think. I never told him, that was my private business. And when he learned it, he was quite impressed. And after I graduated, he was offering me expanded responsibilities and that. But I felt that working for him personally, not for any of his companies, there was no assurance of continuity if he should die. That if he died, I'd be out of a job. So, and I also wanted to practice law. And I had a friend who was a lawyer, a man I'd met through Mensa, who had an office out on Foster Road. So he called me one day and he said, "I had a woman call in who has a domestic relations matter," and he says, "I don't want to take it, I've got enough." He said, "Would you like to take it?" I'd been admitted to the bar, of course. And I said, "Oh, sure." He said, "You can use my office on Saturday for a place to meet her. So I went out to have my very first client. I did two things for people that came through him. And then I was on the fence, and I finally decided that I really did want to practice law, because when I thought about staying with Mr. Miller, I would think maybe I could practice law on Saturdays. But when I thought about practicing law, I never thought, well, I could come back and work for Mr. Miller on Saturdays. So that really told me that I really wanted to do it. I had worked very hard. I came out fourth highest in my class and grades, and I really wanted to do it. So I gave Mr. Miller my notice and started interviewing for my replacement for on his behalf. And eventually we hired a woman, and on my last day there, on my last day there, Brian Booth, who was with the Stoll, with the Davies Biggs firm, called over there on some of Mr. Miller's business with me. And I told him, now don't tell me, I want you to tell Miss B who's taken my place. And I stayed on the line and he discussed it with her. And when he'd finished, then he asked me, he said, what are you going to do? And he knew I had passed the bar. He'd been one who'd signed my admission papers. I told him, well, I'm going to be out on the street looking for a job. He said, what do you want to do? So I told him about what I've told you, pretty much, that I wanted to work with clients. I didn't have any specific area of law in mind. And he said, well, why don't you come over and interview? And that, so I went, thinking, I don't want to be with a big firm. But I would go out of courtesy, because they were Mr. Miller's attorneys, and I'd worked with several people from this office on some of his matters. And so I came, I interviewed. They were desperately in need of somebody to work in two fields of law at the time. One was estate planning and trusts in that field, and the other was securities law. They were short of people for that. And my business background fit those very well, along with my law school education, because, which we don't get into everything you do in a lifetime of 32 years, but there were a couple of years in my life when I was a registered representative and sold mutual funds. So I knew a smattering of what goes on in securities law. We had two or three interviews, and then I was offered a position. And I was interviewing with Mr. Fred Torp, who subsequently left the firm. And Fred said they would offer me this position as a senior associate. So I asked him, well, what does that mean? He said, well, it means you'll never be considered for partnership. And I said, well, why is that? Is it because I'm a woman? You see, I'd grown quite bold in those years. And he said, well, yes, that. We haven't come that far in this firm and in this city. But he said, there's another factor. Our partnership plan is to have younger people coming up in each of the specialties. So as the older ones retire, you've got your progression of people. And I was already chronologically older than the partners in the fields that I was going to be working in. That made a little bit of sense to me. I don't think it's completely irrational. But I said, well, I'd have to think about it. I didn't think I'd worked as hard as I did to get through law school and then come out and consider myself to be sort of a second-class lawyer and not ever being considered for partnership. So I went away, and I thought about it for a while, and then I concluded that I should take it because they would teach me to be a good lawyer. And I thought I'd go in a couple of years, they'd teach me to be a good lawyer, and then I could go out and start my own practice. Or maybe I could persuade them to change their mind. So I came to work on those terms.
And how long after this, how long after you had graduated from law school did you start working for this firm?
1 year.
And how
well,
many?
Well, a little you know, you graduate in 1st of June, and I came to work 1st of August, a year later.
How many lawyers were working for Davies Big?
Well, I think at that time it was about 42, and considered big. It was the biggest in the Portland area.
Do you know how many lawyers were practicing in Oregon at the time?
In general, I think there were, the bar consisted of a little over 3,000 lawyers.
How many of those lawyers were women?
Not very many. I think some of the women lawyers were looking at it one time and figured it was about 2%.
And how many women attorneys were working for Davies Biggs?
None when I came. In their history, they had had two women for short periods of time each. One of them was a law school graduate who had, for some reason, didn't stay. I don't know if she wasn't happy or they weren't happy. She was here a short time. And just before I came, they had a woman who had practiced in another state and had come here to Oregon because her husband got a job here. And she was working here as a law clerk, really, because she hadn't taken the Oregon bar yet. And she wasn't here long because about the time she was going to take the Oregon bar, I guess her husband got transferred someplace else. So she was only here, I understand, even less than a year, a few months. So when I came, there were no other lawyers, women lawyers.
How many partners were there in the firm?
I don't recall. It's just not a figure that's, at least half of them were partners out of the 40 or so.
When you started working at Davies Biggs, you did estate planning and securities work?
Yes, and I think the first couple of years, a little more than half of my time was spent in the securities law field, primarily working on the blue sky side of public offerings. And that was exciting in the sense that everything had to come together at a certain time. You built to this crescendo, and the day was going public, you had to have everything in place. So it was sort of a fun kind of thing in that sense of the satisfaction of seeing it all come together.
How old was your son at this point?
My son graduated from high school at the same time I graduated from law school.
And what was your working schedule like when you first started practicing law?
Well, I worked long hours. I was just thrilled with it. I just loved it. And I had no one at home. My son was gone, and I had no obligations to any person other than myself. And I was just engrossed with it. I just felt like a little kid playing in a toy shop. It was so exciting to me. So I would often be down here till 10 or 11 at night, not necessarily because the workload required it, but because I was so interested and so eager. In fact, one of the partners, Campbell Richardson, said to me one time after a while, he says, you're going to burn yourself out. You don't need to do this. But I did that, and I did that for probably a couple, 3 years. I was so engrossed in every issue that came to my desk.
So the other associates weren't working as hard?
Many of them were working long hours. It was just part of being a lawyer. And occasionally, some of us would all be down here working. We'd go out to dinner together and come back, you know, and you got to know the other people in that sense.
How many years had you been practicing before you started thinking that maybe the senior associate thing wasn't what you were interested in anymore?
Well, I knew when I went in it was not anything I would accept long term. I'd been here, I don't know when I first brought the subject up again, I'd been here over 2 years. How far into my third year, I don't recall. But I asked the supervising partners that I reported to if the partnership wouldn't reconsider. My evaluations on my work had all been good. I'd had very few negative reviews. So I brought it up, and the individual, I don't remember which man it was, said, Well, we'll have to take it up with the partnership. So I just kept right on doing my stuff, working hard, and time went by. And somewhere into, finished my third year, starting at the fourth year, I thought they had never come back and said anything to me. So I said, well, to myself, that means the answer is yes. They surely wouldn't leave me just hanging out there if it was no. And one night I went out to dinner with one of the other associates who was a couple years ahead of me, and I mentioned this to him. And he said, oh, VJ, don't think take anything for granted around this firm. And he went back and told a partner what I had said. This is hearsay. And that partner said, oh, so-and-so hasn't done his job. And apparently the answer was no, and one of the partners was supposed to have come and told me, and he never had. So after this other associate told them my thinking, two of them called me in for a little discussion, and they told me the answer was no. And I thanked them very much, and I went out of the room and I went back to work. And then I put my house on the market, figuring I would have to move. I wanted to put together, at that stage, an all-woman law firm. And I knew the women who I wanted to choose, women who had certain specialties, and I thought we'd make a great, strong, all-woman firm. None of them were willing to make a move from their then situations. And then I talked with a friend in Medford, an attorney, who said, there's lots of work down here. Come down here and rent the office that adjoins mine. I'll give you work. You can build up a good clientele. And that's when I had my house on the market, thinking that that's what I would do. I drove down there. I drove around looking at housing. And then at that particular time, a number of lawyers left the Davies Biggs firm to go with a client who was leaving the firm. So there was a big exodus of lawyers. And the remaining ones were very concerned about how they were going to meet all the client demands that they had. Again, I was rather naive at the time. I didn't think about it as a place to put pressure on them. I just thought as a professional thing I had to tell them not to count on me in the long term. So I did go in to the managing partner of the section, and I told him I knew that they were reallocating the workload among those who were left. And I said, it's only fair to tell you that not to count on me in the long run, because I am going to leave. And that interview was very interesting. The person said, well, what are you going to do? And I said, I don't know yet. I'm in the process of working out some plans. It was significant to me that he asked me if I was thinking about starting my own law firm. I don't know where that idea came from. And I said, well, that's one of the things I'm exploring. And then he said, well, we don't want you to pass up any good opportunities for yourself, but we hope you'll give us time to reconsider. And as I say, it was a good pressure point when they had lost a whole number of lawyers for the first time in the law firm's history, really. But I hadn't done it for that reason. I had done it just a professional, let them know. And as it turned out, they did come back and tell me they would put me on the track for to be considered for partnership. Now, by this time, I had been there 5 years. The normal track to partner is 6 years, was 6 years in this firm at that time. So they told me, now, that's not a guarantee you'll make partner. You'll still have to be evaluated to see if you're doing partner-level work and so forth. So I said, well, I'd really like to stay here with this firm, but I want a commitment from you. I want a commitment that you will give me partner-level work. And I said, I have for 5 years, I've been doing everybody's scut work. I've been doing all the emergencies where you had to get all these documents ready from Friday night till Monday morning, and I'd be down here and I'd get them and I'd get them out. And I said, and I haven't minded, I haven't complained, but I said, you've got to promise me you'll give me partner level work so a year from now you're not going to come up and say you can't make partner because you're not doing partner level work. They gave me that commitment. And they did, and I did, and I became a partner after being here 6 years, along with the young men who had been hired the same year I was. And I must say, after I became a partner, I was treated as an equal. I never had any feeling that anybody was discriminating against me because I was female. I think you have a question, but I think there's a point I want to make before I forget it. I was admitted to the federal bar in the fall after I came to work here. And I'd heard these stories how Judge Solomon would pick on applicants and ask them questions and really sort of kind of left you in fear and trepidation that you wouldn't have the right answer. So before I went over for this admission to the federal court, I went back through all my notes in law school. What do I know about federal law, federal procedure? And I was all shaking. And there were about, I think, 10 or 12 people being admitted that day. And we all lined up at the back of the courtroom. And Judge Solomon up on this bench. And he just went down the line. He had the list. Excuse me. He went down the line and called their name, and they'd answer present or here, and he would then make a comment or two. And when he came to me, I was, you know, shaking in my boots. What is he going to do? And he called my name, and I said, present. And he said, and you're with Davies Biggs Firm? And I said, yes. And he says, it's about time they hired a woman lawyer. And then he passed on to the next one. So that's my contribution to the history of the U.S. District Court.
What was it like being the only woman in a law firm full of 41 other men?
Interesting things. The partnership, the law firm at that time had two monthly events. One was a lawyer's lunch, which every lawyer, partner, and associate would attend. And they also, of course, had their partners' meetings, which were dinners. So I reported on an August 1st, and the business manager came down. He said, now we have a lawyer's lunch on Monday. And he said, I'm sorry, you can't go. I apologize, but it's at the Arlington Club. And he said, we had to make our reservations and arrangements long before you ever came, so I'm sorry we can't, but we'll move someplace else next time. So they moved the lawyer's lunch to the University Club. Well, at the University Club, women couldn't come through the front door in the daytime. They had to go around to the side door. So for quite some time, I was very quiet. I didn't want to make waves for the firm or embarrass anybody, and I'd walk around to the side door. If some of the men were walking with me, they'd go around there with me. And eventually I decided, this is ridiculous. I'm going in the front door. And the first time I did, it just happened that a group of our lawyers all caught up together, and I was kind of in the middle of a wedge of all male attorneys and walked in and went around and went to our place where we had our lunch. The next time I made it a point to go just a few minutes late and go alone. And I walked in the front door, and the young man behind the desk, he jumped up and ran around and said, may I help you? And I just kept walking, and I said, no, thank you, I know where I'm going. And he said, well, may I help you? May I help you? And the poor man, I'm surprised he didn't fall over with a heart attack. He followed me clear to the stairs and down to where I went into our lunchroom. Very concerned. Eventually that policy was eliminated. Second thing then that happened is 6 years later when I became a partner, they couldn't have their partner dinners at the Arlington Club anymore. So they moved the partner dinners. I think we've had at Multnomah Club. Some of those we may have had at the University Club. I don't remember for sure. And those are things that were going on.
How about the way the other associates and partners treated you?
I did not feel there was discrimination against me. There were some people who I knew still had the old shamanist view of how to treat a woman, but they were very careful not to show it. I mean, it was there and you knew it, but you just respected that. That's, they had grown up so ingrained with it that they weren't going to, it was hard for them to think of this woman as really an attorney.
How about your clients?
Clients accepted me from the very beginning. And I think in some ways, because, you know, I had gray hair, many clients didn't know I was a beginner. I mean, they'd walk in the office and here's this gray-haired lady. They assumed I'd been practicing law for 20 years. Where I think some of the young women attorneys that came along may have had a little more resistance from clients because of their youth. I had one woman, one of our attorneys had me talk to a woman about, it was a divorce matter, and he referred her to me, and she met with me and we talked about it, and then she called back a day or two later and she says, I don't want you, I want Mr. So-and-so. And she said, and then she said, it's not you, I just want him. But whether that was because I was female or not, I don't know. I have no reason to believe it. It was or wasn't. I think she just had come to see this man and then he turns her over to somebody else.
Were there many women partners in Portland law firms at the time?
There were smaller law firms where women were partners. Julia Boston and I've forgotten who she was with, two men in out in east, on the east side of the river, partnership. Gladys Evert had been in a partnership with Philip Roth and somebody else. There were a few of these very small groups, two, three people that had a lawyer, a female lawyer. Generally not, except that Carol Hewitt did become a partner with the, can't say the name of the firm now, the year before I became a partner.
Was that also a large law firm?
It was large. It wasn't as large as this one.
There was some sort of a bar announcement or something, wasn't there, about the fact that you were the first woman to become a partner in a major Portland law firm?
I don't recall that there was a bar announcement to that effect. I know that it was said about me by some of the other attorneys around town.
Okay.
And of course, the only answer to that sort of sentence is, depends on how you define a major law firm. Another large law firm had had women for a long time, but never put them beyond, for many years, never put them beyond being an associate.
Which law firm was that?
Isn't this terrible? My mind was just, shush. King, what, King? Was upstairs here for a while. Helen Althaus worked there for many years and years and years as an associate. Jean Bauman worked there. And now, of course, they have women who are partners. It was a transition time for women. But there were many women out there who were in private practice, just sole practice, too. Neva Elliott, in fact, well, I think she had a little partnership, too, for a while. I think there were a couple of men, or maybe they just shared space, I'm not sure.
Were there many women hired shortly after you became partner? Or after you were hired?
Well, we had a young woman hired as an associate after I'd been here about a year and a half, I think, too. And she was here a couple of years and left and went with a law firm in Oregon City where she was a partner, I think. But before she would have been in line here. Then it was a while before we hired another woman, Karen Creason. And then it just burgeoned, and then they just, I had shown the men in this partnership that a woman could work hard, she could do work, hard work, she could stay long hours if necessary, if it was required, and turn out quality work. And so then they began, when they started hiring, they really did away with all those questions of male and female.